You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my new friend, Bridget Sobus. She shares with us a complex story that involves pretty much all the systems in an adult life falling apart. A relationship, a business, a bankruptcy, a significant health scare. And today, she shares with us that she loves her life. And we talk about not only how she made it through those challenges, but also what were the actual decisions and changes that moved the needle for her. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's do it. Bridget Sobus, welcome to Imperfect Adulting.
I'm so happy to be here with you, Amy.
I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
I sure am.
That's awesome. So I start every interview by asking my guests where on the planet they're calling from. Where are you talking to me from? Where are you located?
I love that question because that is so funny because people are always like, and where's Bridget today? Because I've been a nomad for almost 4 years.
Oh, okay. So it changes.
It does. It changes. I could any given month, I could be in a different time zone. It's all over the country.
So do you just bop around the US or are you global? What kind of nomad are you?
You know what? I am US now. Like right now I'm in Pittsburgh with my boyfriend. So yeah, I'm here a lot, but I'm formerly from Chicago.
Okay.
So I had this goal, honestly, I used to own a hair salon. And during the last few years, I was, I had been doing a coaching and consulting, and I was like, I'm going to be setting my life up so that I can live and work anywhere.
Yes.
So once I was going to be ready to part ways with the salon, and I thought I was going to go, I had a dog and a cat at the time. And I'm like, once they leave my life, I'm going to go live in Costa Rica for like 3 months. So then the pandemic happened. My dog and my cat did go on to the next world. And then during the pandemic, I was staying in Pittsburgh with my boyfriend. And then I ended up getting a puppy. So I was like, I don't know if we're ever going to leave the country, be able to leave the country again,
Because it's much more complicated.
Yeah,
much more complicated. I have a longtime friend who he was not actually a nomad, but he and his family were going U.S. to Australia, and they had pets. And so I saw the challenge of moving the pets, all that, I mean, just so hard. So then let me ask you a detail. This is completely off track, not at all what we're going to talk about today.
Okay.
But so do you you're just relocating between like Airbnbs and rental properties in like your car, or are you a van lifer, or how do you do this?
You know what? I've been car free for over since 2000. So I haven't.
Wow. Okay.
2000, even when I lit and I had an apartment in Chicago and my brick and mortar, because public transportation was easy. I just will rent an Airbnb typically. When I go to California, I stay with family.
Okay.
And then, but I'll do an Airbnb.
And then just Uber and whatever.
Pardon?
And then just Uber around wherever.
Yeah, I just Uber. Yeah. I love walking, so I'll walk 3 to 5 miles.
And so your whole business, your whole life fits into suitcases.
It does.
That is fantastic.
I was in Chicago. I was in Bali for like 2.5 weeks in December, and then I was in Chicago. I had to have reconstructive surgery. That's another story. But I wasn't staying with family. So when I came back to Pittsburgh on Wednesday, I literally had like two gigantic suitcases, a carry-on, a backpack.
Like you were moving.
So I do live out of a suitcase sometimes.
That's very cool. So that's actually not what we're going to talk about today. But what we are going to talk about is debt. Like at one point in your life, you told me you were facing $1.3 million in debt and filing for bankruptcy. So does that sound like something we can talk about today?
Absolutely.
Sometimes I ask people if that sounds like a fun topic to talk about, but every once in a while, that fun word doesn't fit in the situation. And $1.3 million in debt doesn't match my equation, probably of fun.
Well, here's the thing. I love to interject fun, even when I work with my clients, le releasing any trauma they might have, because I think fun and laughter is healing. So we can, it is a serious topic, and I think a lot of people hold shame around something like that that could happen to them. So I could talk about it. We can have fun with it. I could be serious. I can, share all the things and the insights.
All right, so let's start by setting the timetable. You and I are talking in 2025. How long ago was it that let's use the bankruptcy filing as a benchmark on the timeline. How long ago was that?
So I was so even farther back. So I think I got married in 2004. Yeah, 2004. Then I bought a salon I was working at in 2005. It became an award-winning business, profitable. I turned it around. That's a whole different story. And then in 2010, I found myself going through a really nasty divorce. My ex-husband, he has passed on. He was a drug addict, and he wasn't paying mortgages on properties that we owned. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, he's running the businesses over here. I'm running the salon, and I was trusting that he was doing the right thing. And then come to find out, I started opening up mail that started finding its way to our address because all the bills were going to the properties. And I wasn't checking on bank accounts, I was just focusing on the salon bank account. And that's when I found out our buildings were going into foreclosure. And I was like, what have you been hiding from me? And I knew there was other stuff. And then finally, things weren't, he wasn't willing to work on things and kept lying. And I filed for divorce. And then it was a really long, really stressful divorce at the time. Like, I literally felt like I was trapped legally to this person. And to get out of the divorce, I chose to take on 100% of the debt.
Oh,
And
that's how it
by
happened.
doing that, plus, well, both of our names were on the buildings, but I chose to take on all of his credit card debt, all of the whatever debt, just to get legally away from him. That was my choice because I felt so trapped and sh chained. And so after that, then I found like then like all the now it's the totals that are in your face. So it literally added up to $1.3 million of debt.
All right, so let's pick this apart, right? So you fall in love at some point, early 2000s, it sounds like. And you and
Yeah, it
you
actually probably was to like 2000.
early two, okay, so you fall in love and you get married. And like many people, you are in this relationship because you love the person and you want to build a future with this person. But at the end of the day, that marriage contract is a financial agreement. It sets the rules of how we share things. So you had a salon, a hair salon, that was one business that you were managing. And then it sounds like there were other business investments, properties that you guys were buying as a partner, as partners, yeah.
We owned two rental properties in Chicago. And we did not live in the properties. We had tenants in all of them, and like he was always borrowing money from me and saying, oh, this tenant didn't pay the rent. And I'm constantly and I, and so we were our it was unfortunately it was we were probably having an argument every week, around money and finances. And then him then he wasn't he was getting into real estate, and he did sell a lot of real estate at the time. And like it was like right before the recession hit. So
2006, right?
so
2006,
he would
2008,
like he had a lot of friends and colleagues, so people with deep pockets. So he was making a lot of money in real estate. And then the market crashed too. And then These are kind of some of the hints that I found out that were happening. Like he wasn't paying his taxes on all the money he made. So then all these like tax dot bills are coming in, and now I'm like, I've got to open this. I got to know what's going on. So
All right.
lots of things were like the wool. I mean, I really hadn't, I didn't know what I didn't know at the time. I mean, I was like back then, I was in my early 30s, and now I'm like, make sure if you get married, do some background checks on people. Because, like, at that age, you don't necessarily think about it. At least I didn't think about it.
So, yeah, so were you aware of the substance misuse before, like as a part of the early courtship, or was that a thing that grew into the relationship?
Yeah, I mean, I knew he was a pot smoker, which I personally am not. I don't have anything against people that do. I mean, it's pretty much legal everywhere now. And
That has
so I
totally
knew.
changed in my lifetime. It was
What'd you say?
something that has totally changed in my lifetime. It was like top secret. Where, like against all of the rules in like the 90s and when I was in college, and now it's like, yay.
Yeah, it's like a free for all. You can walk down the streets and smell it. But even though it's probably not legal, still do. Unless you're in
Right.
California, it's everywhere.
Right. There's many places where it's not legal in Florida, but it's like the worst joke that's ever happened. It's not legal in Florida,
Yeah.
but it's everywhere in Miami, so.
So I did know that part. Okay, so there was a thing that would happen too when I would go out at night, because like in our, I'm 51 now.
Me too.
Oh, okay, same
There
age.
you go. Yep.
And so in my 30, in our early 30s, we were still going out with our friends. And I would go out around probably 8 or 9, and he would say things to me like, now it all makes sense. To me. But at the time, he would say things like, oh, that's too early to go out. I'm not going out that early. Like, I'm, whatever. I'm gonna stay home and be on the computer, and I don't know what he was doing. And I'd be like, okay, fine. Well, I guess I'm going out. So if I had a dollar for every time someone would say to me, where's Patrick? Like, I'd be a millionaire, right? So he would come and meet us like around midnight. So, at that point, you're like, you're in your 30s, you're at a bar, and I'm not really thinking anything of it. I'm like, oh, he's here now.
Okay.
So he did a really good job at hiding it. But then they come to find out after I do get separated, I have all these people that know him that do not know each other, but know me, and were telling me all the same stories.
All right. So there
It
was a
was
real period of
really,
discovery. So he was being living like two sort of lives almost.
Oh yeah, he was definitely living two lives. And like, again, like, I mean, I kind of had a suspicion, and then finally I'm like, what is someone borrowing all this money for? And then I was having him work at the salon because he didn't work. So it was basically like I was now the breadwinner of the family,
Okay.
like him, my dog, and my two cats,
Yeah.
So I'm the breadwinner, and like even like my staff would be like, because I was doing hair at the time too, they would be like, he takes your tips, Bridget. I need you to know he like takes your tips, he takes your money. He was taking money from like the drawer, acting. He was like it was how he treated money was like how a child treats a parent. Like thinking like money just like magically like just goes into a bank account. Like they just don't have any concept, right?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It
Like
does a
that's
little
how
bit.
he was like
So,
treating money.
yeah. So, but did you feel like, so there, the debt was not actually, you were not fully aware of it. So it was other things that were coming up in the relationship that were causing friction and making the decision to want to separate and pursue divorce.
Yeah, well, their debt was a huge part of the reason,
When did you,
because,
and how did you become aware of the debt?
well, because I started opening up his IRS bills. And
Okay.
one of the great good things, though, was that he did have a tax bill of over $50,000 that was before
Okay.
we got married. So I wasn't liable for that part.
Okay.
But at the time, though, when I discovered it, I was like, we have to work on this. Like, we have to get this handled. And
Okay,
then
so first.
he would avoid it and avoid it and avoid it. He never wanted to file our taxes, obviously. Why? Because he didn't want to face that debt. So he would avoid filing taxes. He would avoid all this other stuff. So it just became like more stressful and more stressful. Like I even had to have a conversation with my father and be like, this is what's happening. Like I think I'm like on the road to like leaving him.
And so were you filing, how, so this was a couple of years. So then were you filing taxes for your business and yourself, or how was he, or were you not, were you all
No, I
filing?
was
Did you
getting
think he was
behind.
filing? He thought you thought he was
Yeah,
filing.
I was getting behind. And then finally, when I got divorced, then I just took it all on. And then
Okay.
I filed like married, filing separately. Oh, and then when I was supposed to get all these tax returns back, I was supposed to get thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in tax returns. The IRS decided to keep it and put it towards his taxes because we were married.
So
So,
what is what this is in Illinois?
yeah.
What is Illinois a community property state? Like, is that how do they like when you're married, is everything combined? Do you know?
Yes, I don't. You know what? I don't. I've got a real to give you a real like factual answer. I'd have to go back and like look.
Okay. All right. I was just curious. I was just curious
Yeah,
because
I
every
gotcha.
state can be different and
Yeah.
nobody we do a terrible job of training people who are getting married to like check this kind of stuff before you get married, because really most people don't think about it
Yeah.
until there's a dissolution of the marriage. All right, so can you describe, thinking back to this situation, when you begin to realize you open the bills, the marriage is not 5 stars out of 5 stars, you know, you've got some doubts going on, but you begin to open the tax bills and you realize that this is a big situation, a big problem. If you could describe that in like 3 to 5 words, how did you feel?
Probably anger, resentment, shame, probably guilt because I inward because I was like, how in the hell did I let this happen to myself? A lot of oh, I had a lot of anger, a lot of anger, a lot of resentment. Yeah, I was like at the time, like we're everyone's all free and clear of this. I'm very like aware of like your unconscious mind and like installing limiting beliefs. So, everyone's free and clear of this, but I was having massive like panic attacks. Anxiety was like through the roof.
And how did you, so you've worked through it, you're on the other side, which is why this makes it a good time to do it. I mean, this seems like it would be very scary to me. The numbers are very large, and money is important. Money is how we do things. You had your own business that you had all done. Divorce is not a fun process, even if you like each other, which is not usually why people get divorced, in my experience. But so I can really see how that was building up. So you were under a lot of emotional pressure. How long did the divorce process take to sort of finalize?
It took a little over 2 years.
So 2 years
So,
for the divorce,
yeah.
and that's when you finally get to see the full financial picture, because that's when you get the balance sheet.
Yeah, so I mean, I like again, I at the time, I wanted to do an amicable divorce, so I hired that type of an attorney. Going back, would I have hired a litigator? I don't know. Because I would run into I would have my own clients that would be like 10, 5, 10 years later, they're still getting a divorce. I'm like, oh my gosh. Takes forever. So you have no, it's like, I don't know which route would have been better, but I hired an amicable divorce attorney. Then we hired business, not business, divorce coaches to work with that. We hired a, well, I actually probably hired them because I'm the one that paid for it, but someone that, what are they, like a negotiator, like what they're
Mediator.
a mediator. Yes, thank you. So then we hired a mediator and like he would avoid everything like the plague. He wouldn't show up to meetings. He wouldn't come like, and then he wouldn't give records of like the bill, the properties. And he He just wouldn't show up. He was just kept dragging his feet, dragging his feet. Then we brought a different attorney in. That was a mutual friend of ours that was actually my business attorney. But then we got him involved, and then he was actually, it was really hard for me at times because he was kind of almost siding with Patrick. And he'd be like, well, he does technically own da 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 da. And I would be like, so finally, I just, like, again, I felt like I was so trapped. I felt like at the time I tried everything. So finally, I was like, screw it. I just want to get out of this marriage. I just will take on all the debt. I mean, he probably still owes the attorney that he hired money, I would come to guess, but he's passed on now, so she'll probably never get it. And I've made peace with him too. I mean, we talked after the, like, years after the divorce, but, there were times when she was like super really mean to me, like when we were like having meetings, like saying like that I made $75,000 a year in salary, like, oh, like that was so much. I'm like, that's not really a lot in Chicago for a couple.
Yeah.
You know, like she would bully me. And finally one day I was like, I looked at her and I said, you know, I am a human being and I have feelings, so I'm gonna
Yeah.
ask you to respect me. It was like the mic drop.
So then this ended. Did you get a judgment? You got a judgment from a judge that was like, this is a dissolution, and you took ownership of all of the companies and all of the responsibility for the financial assets.
Yeah, well, and then this is another thing that happened. So in the agreement, he still had control of the properties,
Okay.
even though I took responsibility for all the debt. And then there was another thing where his brother was involved, and then I had a contract. I signed a contract to give him a ton of money. It was a crazy entangled web. I mean,
All right, so
it's
it
insane.
carried through. One of the things that I like, one of the things that's really tough, I think, about these things is that they do last past divorce. Like, so we think that divorce is an ending, but it's like a redefining of who does things, and it pisses people off on a regular basis that a lot of stuff still continues. But so then, though, when it's all coming to you, you can finally add it up in the balance sheet, and you realize that you've got $1.3 million in debt, and it looks like your income from the hair salon at that time was like $75,000. That's not a great income statement to be looking at.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was, I mean, I'm just throwing out a number. I mean, the
Okay.
salon was doing really well, but here was the biggest challenge. The two properties that we owned together that my name was on the title were in foreclosure processes already.
Okay, so
That
there
was
was
the
no.
biggest,
Okay.
that was the biggest challenge. So when I started talking to attorneys, and then now, like, litigators and property attorneys, now I'm getting the, you have to file bankruptcy.
Okay.
There,
How
if
did that
you do
feel?
not file bankruptcy, they are going to come after you.
Okay.
So I'm now getting, and then it wasn't even the attorneys, it was even my parents and then other
Okay.
mentors and business people that were my colleagues. They were like, you have to get from out from under this because it's almost impossible at this stage.
And
Because of how
bankruptcy,
far along the properties were in
right.
foreclosure.
Before this started, okay, so you're going through the divorce. All of these things are happening. Tell us a little bit more about who, other than Patrick, was in your life supporting you and on your team at this time. Who else was around advising you?
Well, Patrick was not on my team,
Right,
but
but who else was around?
who was on my, I mean, I had a lot of people on my team. I mean, my parents were supportive of me. I was also, not only did I own my salon, and I had at the time, I think, I don't know, anywhere from 15 to 22 employees.
Okay.
Well, that's another story in itself, but I didn't really, at the beginning, I really kept it undercover and didn't tell the employees because I didn't want them to worry.
Yep.
So that was like a whole nother story. But who I had on my team were, I had mentors. I had also been working for another, as an independent contractor, as a coach and consultant.
Okay.
salon industry. So I had those people on my team. I mean, I had really good friends. So I had a really amazing support network.
Okay, that is
And
great.
I
All
got
right.
myself into therapy.
Okay. All
And
right,
I always
very
had a
good.
coach because I'm a coach.
Very cool. All
And
right.
oh,
So
it was so funny. This is actually when you asked what my support network was so when I first bought my salon in 2005, I hired a coach to work with because at the time, like I was making six figures as a hair colorist working in a dysfunctional salon. And I was like, if he can own a business, there's no reason why I can't.
okay.
And then I buy the business and then lose my six-figure paycheck because I realize I don't know how to run a business. And I was a hot mess. So I hired a coaching consultant and I turned the business around. And that's how it became profitable and award-winning. So that inspired me to want to become a coach.
Okay.
So during my divorce, so this is so funny because when people say to me, oh my gosh, Bridget, I would love to become a coach, but I have to get my life together first. I'm like, there's no better time to become a coach because when I was in the middle of my divorce, feeling like this big hot mess, I met a woman that was a master certified coach. And I said to her, I just want to become a life coach. And she was like, well, there's this program starting in Chicago. And I just signed up for it. I didn't know anything about it. So I was literally in one of the most stressful years of my life. I was literally becoming a life coach going through this nasty divorce. So that was like amazing help for me.
It's very learning how to coach is very introspective, and we are our own first clients at all the times. But so, bankruptcy, so you've got people in your corner, you've got all this information, you've spent several years dismantling this relationship, lots and lots of bad news and scary numbers. When people say to you that they think you should file bankruptcy, what were your initial thoughts about bankruptcy? Because people often, start with the idea that bankruptcy is a failure, bankruptcy is bad.
Yes. So I was like, well, first and foremost, the thoughts to myself came, and I even said it to attorneys. I was like, if I file bankruptcy, I'm at risk for losing my salon that I worked like blood, sweat, and tears in. Like I literally reinvented that business and, and led it and coached my own team for it to be successful. I almost had it for 15 years.
Wow.
So that was my first and foremost. And then my second part was not just losing the business, then this people pleaser kicked in inside of me. So that's like a whole, like I'm a recovered people pleaser as well. So the people pleaser went into full force. Like, oh my gosh, these people could lose their paychecks. They could lose their livelihood. Oh my gosh, then I'm going to be embarrassed and I'm going to let them down. So that came into place. And then I was also like ego driven and I was like, no one's going to take my salon away from me. I'm going to leave it, lose it on my own terms. So then it was like people pleasing, ego driven, like putting on a strong face. But then I'm like, behind all that mask, I was like seriously suffering inside. Like I literally went into like 2019, I coined my dark night of the soul year.
Okay. All right. So you face this. So how do you, what is the first step that you take to making this transition? Like, so you told me, on the intake form that facing this challenge pushed you to reinvent your life. And so it was scary. It was embarrassing. There was a lot of shame. What was the beginning of that reinvention process? Because you're at this point, you're looking at bankruptcy. People are telling you it's the right thing to do. It's scary. All of these things. What do you remember? What some of the first things you actually did that began to shift it were?
So I did have a couple of mentors say to me, Bridget, it's time to let the salon go. Like you're ready for something different because I was very heavy into the coaching consulting industry at that point already. But again, the ego and the people pleasing kicked in and the embarrassment and shame. So through that time, 2019, so I chose to buy my own business back for a hefty
Okay.
amount of money. And then I was having a really hard time keeping up with the payments. I was trying to hide it from my own staff. Because I didn't want them to worry. But then I came to a point where I'm like, I have to tell them. I can't hide this anymore. It's too, they're wondering why I'm acting like not me.
Okay.
And then I tell them, and then they were like, oh, what do we need to do to help you? And I'm like, do your job. Just do your job. Come to work and make money. That's what you need to do. But then I was away a lot because I was working really heavy in consulting and coaching work, like trying to make money over here to make it all work. And then unfortunately, my culture just kind of, I had a couple naysayers like, why did she have to tell us that? That's not our business. And then I had to walk out of my salon, and I was really close to actually almost having it all paid off. And then I ended up having like made a lot of people leave that had been working for me for a long time. And then that was the point where I was like, I tried to give it one more go to be like, I'm gonna reinvent the business, but I was just not even in love with it anymore. So finally I was like, I finally did feel like I hit rock bottom. And I was
Okay.
like, I called one of my mentors to actually was she actually owned the first consulting company that I hired when I first bought my salon. I called her and I was like, I need your help. Like, I'm putting my ego aside and like, can you help me? And she graciously invited me to like this big event that she was having called Power Your Profits, I think.
Okay.
And she was actually out of the salon industry. So I went to this event. I'm like in the negative, no money in my bank account. And like, finally, I just made a powerful decision and I was like, I have to put myself first. I'm selling the salon.
Okay.
So it was kind of had, I had this like mini breakthrough during her event, made that powerful decision. And then like, I went home and I put the business on the market, to sell it.
Okay.
And then the pandemic actually happened.
So before we get into that, I just want to double click on this because I love to dig and push and uncover and peel back the layers and try to get to like some of the decisions that set the dominoes in order. And a lot of times there's an external voice that comes in that mirrors back to us what we need to see, right? So it's like you were in this, you were very involved in the business, you were very emotionally attached, as you would be to your own life, right? I don't think it's easy to like not be emotionally attached to the things happening in our own life. You've gone through years of really, really, this is a very complicated story with relationship and bankruptcy and all of these things. But you reach out to your support network, you end up in a situation where you're at an event, so you've got blinders on. You've changed your location, you're outside of your location, you're focusing on this. And that's the moment where you can see sort of clearly, like, all right, what I want to do is make this tough decision to sell my business.
Yeah.
And that's the step that puts you on the path to redefining. Okay, that is amazing. That is amazing. Okay, so with the benefit of time, because this was several years ago, almost 10 years ago, how do you describe your life today?
Oh my gosh. God, well, it was like by the time I sold the salon, and that was out of my life. I sold it in 2000. Wait, the pandemic? I hate that I
2020 was the
have to
pandemic.
be like, when's the pandemic? And then what
Right. So
happened
not
before
10
then?
years, 5
I'm using
years.
it as a marker. So yeah, so in June of 2020, that's when the salon was, that was definitely like, that's another story. The guy that ended up buying my salon, he didn't end up doing very well, and he ended up filing bankruptcy, and I lost out on $20,000 that he
Well,
owed
I mean, it
me.
was a tough
So I've
time.
lost a lot. I've made a lot of money and I've lost a lot of money.
Comes
And
in,
I will
goes out.
make more money and I'll probably spend more money. I don't know. Money is energy. That's kind of how I look at it. And
Yeah.
so can you ask me the question one more time,
How would you
Amy?
describe your life today?
Oh, my life today? Oh my
Yeah.
gosh, I love my life. Yeah, I love what I do for my career. Like, it is a lifestyle. Like, I will be doing what I do when I'm in my 80s just because of my love for it. I get to
Okay.
travel. I have a great man of my life, that he's my monogamous partner. I have the cutest dog in the world. Her name's Rosie. And got a great family, great support network. I mean, the tools that I've actually learned since that, I had been a coach with the International Coaching Federation and didn't have a lot of tools, but now I have this, I've learned all these new sets of tools that help me with my own mindset to regulate my own emotions and my nervous system. And I know how to get out of breakdowns quicker, sooner, faster, because they still occur, because that's just life. I really love
But
my
yeah,
life.
so you went from feeling trapped and really,
Ooh.
really, weighed down, and now you're in it. That's the arc I was going for. All right. So now this next question, this may be, honestly, this might be a terrible question, right? Like, normally I don't actually like to ask people questions that involve them rewriting a past portion of their life, because like these things really did happen. But there are people who have an idea that these hard challenges are required for personal growth. Like, there are people who really do believe that. And so I thought it might be interesting to ask you, because this is one of the hardest challenges. And actually, it was doubled up. There were more hiding. Like, all I knew about was the bankruptcy, but you also had the divorce. The question is, like, if you had to guess, because there's no way to really know, but do you think you would have gone through this sort of personal evolution and leveling up as a person, as a coach, if you had not gone through the hardship of this relationship dissolving and the bankruptcy and selling the salon?
No, that's a great question because I mean, everyone's free and clear of this. I've also had breast cancer twice.
And breast cancer, right? We didn't bring that up. Yes.
It's so, I mean, it's like when I think back about in my 20s, because that's when I met, my ex, there were definitely red flags that I like stepping back, like, oh, if you would have just paid attention to those red flags. But who knows? I don't
Well,
know.
they
If
look very
I
stylish in the
didn't,
beginning.
yeah,
They're
I mean,
very
if I
attractive,
if
the red flags. It's like,
what'd you
whoop,
say?
the red flags look like a lot of fun. It's like,
Oh, I
yay,
know, right?
red.
Like that's what the what is that, what do they
The
call it?
matador.
Matador with the bull. I mean, I don't know. Like if I hadn't married him, would I have actually gone down the path of would these opportunities, because actually I ended up buying the salon from a friend of his that I started working for. So I don't know if like would I have become a salon owner? Would I have instead just been a really amazing master colorist working as an educator for a hair color company? Because that was what I thought I wanted to do back then. Would I have read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, which actually set me on track to become an entrepreneur, because I was doing a client's hair and she was like, I was telling her about this guy I started dating that was in real getting into real estate. She was like, you should get him this book, Rich Dad Poor Dad. And I was like, oh, okay. And I had started getting into like self-development books at the time, like reading books on Taoism and like the self-help stuff, Deepak Chopra. So I went to the library, or not the library, the bookstore, and I went to look at this book, Rich Dad Poor Dad by Richard Kiyosaki. It was the tackiest book I've ever looked at in my life. It was like black and purple dollar signs and gold. I was like, this book looks terrible. So I'm gonna read it first before I give it to him, because I want to make sure it's good. That book literally changed my life. Like before I was married to him, I paid off every dollar, every p debt that I was in. I paid off all my credit cards really fast, and then I was literally living like one paycheck would go in the bank and in the savings. One would be for paying my bills, and then I was really good at managing saving my tips that were cash at the time. So I don't know. I mean, so meeting him did lead all these other events. What I will say though, in hindsight, this is where I'm my mess the work I do now, and I put a really strong message out to entrepreneurs and business owners to really work on your mental health. I mean, I know we're not going to go dive deep into this, but in hindsight, working on your stress, or the stress, not yours, the stress or the anxiety you may feel, or whatever that else is. Like, I really do believe mental health is so important because it does affect our physical health. So
I think that,
would I go back and, maybe focus on my mental health more? Sure. But at
okay.
the same time, I've gone what I've gone through, and like now I have it for lessons to share my story with, people to be like, your mental health is your priority. Like, it has to be. You have to heal the inner child. Hey, heal the wounded parts of you. Heal the trauma so that your mental health is like, I just think it's like it's gonna, go all over the place. So my path has been my path. Coulda, woulda, shoulda, I don't like should because it's like part of it's like a shaming word. But yeah, I mean, but at the end of the day, it's led me to like live my life, and I really do live by like there's no failure, there's only feedback, so it's like, okay, so what's happening? What am I learning? What are the positive things I know about myself, and what's inspired action will I take on next? So it's really helped had me have a more resilient mindset, and yeah, keep going, keep on,
Very
keep
cool.
on.
Very cool. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final fun questions, but I want to give you a chance to very directly go ahead and tell the audience who's listening, what is it that you do now? How can people find you online? And then you have a special offer for the audience, which I'll share after you tell them how to find you.
Awesome. So I own Power and Joy Coaching Academy. So one of my niches that I work with entrepreneurs that have been stressed, burnt out, people pleasing, overwhelmed, possibly resenting their own lives and businesses to reinvent their lives with power, joy, and profits. And I do that through modalities of very quantum leap breakthroughs and trauma releases. I'm also a certified coaching and trauma, PTSD, and addiction. And so I do a lot of mindset breakthrough work, inner child healing. And then I also have certification programs. So I certify people in the modalities of NLP, timeline therapy, hypnosis, and I have ICE, International Coaching Federation, mentorship and training programs. So
Oh, very
yeah, so
nice.
I love coaching. So it's all coaching and bringing all the modalities. Like, I love unconscious coaching, which is more like the hypnosis and the NLP and the timeline therapy and meditation work, and then the conscious coaching. So yeah.
And you have a wonderful offer for the audience, which is a 90-minute breakthrough call, which has a value of $997. And we have a link that people get that as a gift. So that's a very generous gift. The link will be in the show notes. And also, the best way to get these links, the easiest way to get them, is to be a subscriber to Imperfect Adulting, and then it comes into your email box. So that's my plug to sign up to my email community. All right. This has been a great conversation. We're going to do three final questions. They are just for fun, rapid fire, just answer with whatever comes top of mind. Do you have a favorite flower or plant?
Oh my gosh, roses.
Any color? Special color?
I love them all, but I do buy red roses. I like pink roses. I don't know, whatever's just speaking to me
At
at
the
this
time, but
I
okay,
love them.
roses, very good. Are you a person who likes to cook for yourself and others, or would you rather have somebody else prepare the food for you?
I love cooking, and I do like someone else cooking for me, but I do love cooking. I was just talking yesterday with my boyfriend and his friend, and we're talking about cooking. I literally could spend a Sunday just in the kitchen for hours and hours chopping vegetables, preparing things. I love cooking.
That is spectacular. All right, now. So I write these beforehand. So I did not know you were nomadic, but I was like, do you like to travel? If you do, are you a person who, when you travel on vacation, not when you're nomadic, are you a person who enjoys an organized tour, or do you like to explore new places on your own?
I like to explore or on my own.
All right, very
I
cool.
like
That's
to, yeah.
it. That's it, Bridget Solbus. Thank you
Cool.
very much for being a wonderful guest today.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.